What does it mean to live life to the fullest, train to your potential, and perform at your best?
Leave nothing on the table. That's a non-negotiable, is that I strive to be better every day. Because if I'm not on top of my game, how is anybody else going to follow me down the road?
Keep demanding more of yourself to live up to that potential and to stay hungry.
Training is progress. You know, when I look at the word training, I think of steps, baby steps to get somewhere that you want to be. And that is basically your life journey.
That's a mindset in itself, man. It's like, it's not just about, I know that for you, a lot of that's about the physical, but we're constantly in training, whether it's growing our skill sets, whether it's growing our physical bodies, whether it's growing our relationships, whatever. And all of that's a training ground. And that kind of goes back to the mindset that we just talked about.
You underestimate yourself and you don't even start. But then once you start, you often surpass what you thought you could do.
Perform at your best, mate. That's sort of what life is all about. You know, I want to have the knowledge, I want to have the fitness, the health, the ambition and drive that no matter what comes along, when that next phone call comes, I can just say yes. I don't have to worry. Just go and do it.
Yo, what is up, guys? Welcome back to the Live, Train, Perform podcast. I'm your host, Sean Coba, and joining me again for I think it's probably officially the second time, but unofficially about the fourth time, Paul. Paul Minter of Head Up Charity. How are you, mate?
I'm doing well, thanks, Coach. Yeah, really well.
Yeah, good, mate. Now, for the listeners, Paul is the founder of Head Up Charity, who is running 5,000 miles around the UK, and he's currently 2 months, just over 2 months in. How many kilometres have you covered now, mate?
Oh, I don't work in kilometres. I do miles. Kilometres will sound better, but I don't know. I'm about 1,500 miles in.
1,500 miles already. How's the body feeling?
Body overall is good. I've got like niggles and pains, hips. I wear a 10-kilogram bag with a 4-foot flag flying as well. So with the wind, it can cause a lot of drag. So my hips taking a bit of a battering. My knees are. But like I think I said to you before, only to be expected. I can't be doing this crazy sort of mileage every day and not expect to have it. But no real pains. Nothing that's causing any real problems.
Yeah, and I mean the cause is so prominent in your mind, and I'm sure that is enough to, you know, get you over the line every single day. Can you explain to the listeners why exactly you're running 5,000 miles around the UK?
Absolutely. So myself and some others, three other guys, Simon, who you know very well, and then two others, set up a charity called Head Up Charity. We're all veterans. We've all spent many years in the armed forces. Between us, we've done something like 15 tours. And we've all lost a lot of friends to suicide. Myself, I was in a really bad place at one point, and I felt that the help and the services that were available to me, missing lots of different things and speaking to lots of different people, they feel the same way. So we come together, and we basically had enough of going to our friends' funerals and seeing our friends in crap places. So we've decided to come up with an idea to develop a 7-day positive mindset retreat, completely non-militarized, but for all services of the armed forces, including veterans and reservists, which is over 5 million people in the UK. And we've got a big business plan to get a multi-million pound retreat set up. And as a new charity, it's very difficult to get the word out there, to let people know who you are, to get backing, networking, connections. So I came up with the ingenious and somewhat crazy idea of running all around the UK, all the coastlines, and basically just flying the flag, talking to people, making connections, making networking, letting people know who we are, getting a charity name in people's mouths, and also do a decent amount of fundraising as well.
That's incredible, man. And if anyone's interested to hear the backstory and, you know, the demons that Paul dealt with himself, you know, after multiple combat deployments in Afghanistan, you know, and all of the ramifications that occurred from those deployments, you know, we went pretty dark. We went pretty deep. We shared a lot of your story, but also your lessons and the tools that you'd use to get yourself out of a funk, get yourself out of a dark place, deal with your demons. And I'm assuming that that's like an ongoing process, right? That's something that's still happening today.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but certainly for myself, you know, these memories, feelings, emotions, they don't go away just because you feel better for a few weeks or a few months. It's something that you just work on every single day, and you can learn to use these emotions and feelings to your strengths and also to help other people in the process. So I'm constantly holistically working on myself every day. This run is all a huge therapy session for me as well.
That's an excellent point, man. And it's something that I want to touch on that was, you know, this question or that question was kind of leading towards. It is a constant work in process, and you need to put the work in. And you listened to the episode that Simon and I recorded a couple of weeks ago, and I'll have that linked in the show notes for the audience as well. But, you know, something that he spoke about was he's like, man, Paul's just in war mode. And like I explained it, I was like, you know, it's like when you're on deployment, you just have your shit squared away and you're fucking ready to go at a moment's notice. And you've got a vision, you've got a drive, you've got something that's pushing you every day. You've got something to work towards. You know who your identity is, and you know what that identity needs to do on a daily basis. And that's exactly what you're doing, man. This is where a lot of guys, veterans in particular, but you know, the world, the wider world in the last couple of years going through the pandemic has experienced themselves. They have lost their tribe, their identity, their purpose, their motivation, their direction. They don't really know who they are. And this is something that, again, is a constant work in process. And you're going through that now. And talk to me about the similarities of what you're doing right now and being on deployment and how that's working for you in managing your mind and you know, we'll kind of go into some of the things that you have been thinking about and how you have been processing things a little bit differently because, as you mentioned, it's not just about, you know, doing some things that make you feel good for a couple of weeks. Like, you need to reframe those stories, those narratives, take some lessons from the past, overlay them onto your present, which is then going to shape your future.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the fact that you and Simon touched on, it's like a mission, you know, this is like a tour for me. I mean, the fact that my run is lasting 7 months, that's how long a tour used to last. So, you know, the way I look at it, I'm away, 100%. I'm on tour, I'm on a mission. I've got missions, I've got mission statements, I've got goals, I've got targets, there's certain things that I've got to do every day, but the things I'm doing are all very similar every single day, just with different people, making new connections. But yeah, it's, like you say, it's a mission, and every day is a fun and exciting way to promote what we're talking about. When I started this charity, I completely cut off all strings financially. You know, I haven't taken a wage since I left the army because I live off my savings and a bit of passive income that I've got. So financially, you know, I'm very much in a much less better position than I was before. So now what that does for me, it drives the purpose even more. It makes the mission even more important. Yeah, and it's a really fun, enjoyable headspace to be in.
Let's talk about some of the headspaces that you've gone through and been in, because I'm sure there's been some fluctuations, as with everyday life, man. You know, people try and chase happiness, and if you try and chase happiness, it's an emotion, right? Like, it's fleeting, it comes and goes, and there's so many things that influence emotions, and some of those things we can influence ourselves by the, you know, the way that we're living our life and how we're eating and sleeping and training and all that meditation, all that type of stuff. But, you know, we don't have total control over that. Yes, we can influence it, but we don't have total control. There's other external factors that contribute to how we're feeling on a daily basis, how our hormones operate, our neurotransmitters, so on and so forth. Now, talk to me about some of the biggest highs that you've felt whilst you've been running. Have you felt like anything like the runner's high that people talk about, getting into a flow state, just having complete clarity on what you're doing, why you're doing it, and the direction that you're moving in?
So every day, just so to give you a bit of clarity as to how my days work, and then you'd have a better understanding as to the sort of crazy highs I'm getting all the time, is I don't ever go home. I've got a backpack on. This is me for 7 months going from town to town to town. And every evening I stay with someone new, someone I've never met before. I've stayed with lords, MPs, teachers, fishermen, veterans, all sorts of people from all walks of life. And every single person has a story. Everyone wants to talk to me. Everyone wants to hear my story. And that in itself is a high. Having strangers take me into their house, take me into, you know, look after me for an evening and a morning. And, you know, wanting to hear my story, that, you know, and just being in that engaging situation with someone I've never met before and opening up, them opening up to me, it's a huge high in itself. And just being social, being open-minded to talk to different people who have different views to yourself or similar views is a really big high. But seeing the gratitude so grateful of the how nice people are, the humanity of just strangers coming out. People come to cheer me on as I'm running down the road. I've had people drive 50 miles inland just to say, well done, Paul, we appreciate what you're doing. And that's it, they go again, and they've got to drive 50 miles back home again. That is such a big hire, because this charity and the people that I want to help, like we want to help, it's huge. I've lost 3 more friends to suicide since starting this run 2 months ago. You know, and I'm talking to, so for me, this is really personal. This is really, you know, a big thing. And to have people that just want to come along and say, you know, we feel you, we understand what you're going through. We appreciate that you're trying to do something to help people. That's a big high. But also every day, I know I've had hundreds and hundreds of people join me on runs. I've had everything from a 12-year-old girl who ran 14 miles. She only ever done like 3 or 4 miles before. She ran 14 miles with me with her dad. I've had a 74-year-old man who dusted off his running trainers after 14 years just to do 2 miles with me. So many people are coming out. I've had people on bikes because they can't walk properly. I've had people who run for Great Britain, professional runners, come and join me to talk about stuff, veterans, all sorts. So that is the biggest high. Every single day I wake up thinking, who am I going to meet? What stories am I going to share? And I'm never disappointed. So it's just a constant high throughout the whole day. And just seeing the humanity, the niceness of people is the biggest high that you can get.
That's incredible, man. Like, I was getting emotional just listening to that. Like, I've got a few tears in my eyes now, man. Like, it's really inspirational, bro, I've got to say. Something that came up for me then is, you know, a lot of veterans, when they are going through a tough time, they do isolate themselves and they do put themselves in a position where they're not seeing people and they don't like going out into the public and meeting new people and being around new people and crowds and things like that. Did you ever go through anything like that? And if so, has this, the last couple of months going through this process, meeting new people, has that helped ease, you know, any apprehension about being around new people, being in new environments, etc.?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it before, so I'm not going to go into it too deeply, but I suffered really bad with paranoia, really badly, to the point that, you know, all sorts of bad things were happening in my life. And then that paranoia then turns to anxiety and depression. And you just don't want to go outside no more. You don't want to get in these situations or have your mind in them sort of situations. People have all different reasons why they get into that sort of state. But for me, it was a very slow burner. And I ended up being very recluse. I didn't talk to people much. If I was going to the gym, I'd put my headphones in, I'd be by myself. I wouldn't say hello to anyone. Walking down the street, head down, because I don't want thoughts coming into my mind. And then I ended up spending months and months and months in my room on my own, not talking to anyone. So that had a real long-lasting effect on my head. And so when I decided to change my life around and get better, the first thing I did was put self-worth back into me. So I've done a whole bunch of crazy challenges. But that was about 12 to 14 months worth of me just getting myself back out there. But I still wasn't talking to people. But when I've completed these challenges and I've done really well, I then had to work on my social skills because I still wasn't talking to people. Even if I was going out to the pubs or bars or events, you know, I'd just hang around the same people that I knew. I didn't want to talk to anyone new. So now this run has really put me in the mix. I can't be any more out there and sociable. And you know what? In our heads, sometimes we play stories of this person isn't quite like me. They're going to think this, or they're going to be like that, or they're not going to understand me. And we let it get to us. But actually, when you just open up with someone in any form, or just say hello, or just ask them how they're doing, you'd be so surprised at how the sort of feedback you get. And, you know, we make so many stories up in our heads, and they're just stories. That's all they are. You just got to talk to people, find out about them, and you'd be very surprised at how non-judgmental people actually are.
Interesting what you just said then. And it's something that I've my brain's just ticking at the moment. Like, when you decided to run 5,000 miles around the UK to raise awareness, raise funds, draw attention to Head Up Charity, what you guys were doing in the mental health space in the UK, you know, wanting to build this retreat to give veterans and give people that were kind of struggling, not necessarily struggling, some people may be struggling, some people, you know, a little bit more proactive, give them these tools to be able to, you know, educate them at this resort so then they can take back to their life, implement, teach their network, teach their friends, teach their mates, etc. When you were thinking about running around the UK, did you, like when you were planning it out in your head, did you consider that, you know, did you deliberately put yourself in that position where you're like, I'm going to stay with random people, I'm going to get by on the kindness of strangers and have people open their doors for me, feed me, so on and so forth? Like, is that something that you, like a decision you made consciously to put yourself in that situation to help you, as you said, be part of your therapy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or is that something that just unfolded organically?
No, this is a deliberate plan by me. You know, one, I wanted to run around and spread the word, but I wouldn't say terrified because it's a bit of a powerful word, but I was very anxious about meeting people. You know, how am I going to react? Because I know that I can go into my shell. I go into my shell quite heavily, and I'm like, I don't want to be going into my shell when I'm meeting someone new. And I've not been that sort of person to go and approach people and talk to them. I've never been like that. But I knew that I wanted to change. I knew that I wanted to be a more sociable person. I want to be more interactive. But I know that it's better for me mentally. And especially with the job or the role that I'm going into now, helping people, I need to be that sort of person that talks to people, and not just one type of person, like the typical hardcore soldier, like the people that I know already, but just people from all walks of life, from all cultures, from all different places, old and young, all sorts. And sometimes I know that I'm going to, people contact me all the time and say, Paul, I want to run with you tomorrow, I'm going to run with you. And I always get that instant, oh, goodness, you know, how are we going to get on? But as soon as we meet, it's, you know, you can feel each other's energy. You look at each other, you smile, you're saying, hey, thanks for coming and joining me today. And they're instantly smiling, going, oh, no. And they're feeling the same way. They're a bit anxious. But 2 minutes into the conversation, or by the end of the run, we're hugging each other and we're like, oh, let's stay in touch. You know, we feel that connection, that bond is so strong. But before that, I'm all like fluttering and going, oh my goodness, what's going to happen here? But the more you do it, the more you get used to it. And it's just.
Dude, that right there, everything you just said then is like you conditioning yourself, right? You made a conscious decision that, you know, you have had some maybe social anxiety, haven't been comfortable in group environments, etc., but you kind of forced yourself. You made that conscious decision that this is going to be part of the process, you know, of running around the UK raising awareness is, you know, that's a part of your therapy as well. You need to put yourself in a position where you are going to be a little bit uncomfortable. And as you said, the more you do it, the more comfortable you become. You become conditioned to that. And I think that's a really powerful point for the audience to take away is, you know, if you do feel a little bit anxious about something, you don't feel comfortable about something, like, you know, we need to challenge ourselves. That's what adaptation is. We are adaptation machines, especially like combat veterans, man. Like, we are fucking adaptation machines. Like, we get taught how to be the jack of all trades, and like, you just get shit done with the least amount of resources, right? And as humans, we are very good at adapting to things, but we can also adapt in a negative manner if we remove ourselves from, you know, group environments. We don't start seeing people. We limit our social exposure and things like that. Then we start adapting in that manner, and we become less and less comfortable in those environments. But it goes the other way as well. Like, if you start exposing yourself to that stuff a little bit more, put yourself in those positions, and it's not like you go, hey, I'm going to go into a fucking room with 10,000 people. You go, all right, I'm going to go out like for dinner with a couple of people that I don't know. Maybe there's one friend there. I'm going to put myself in an environment where I'm meeting a couple of new people. Start small. And once you get comfortable there, then you build, then you build, then you build. And that's exactly what adaptation is, man. Give yourself just enough stress. Put yourself in just enough of an uncomfortable position that, you know, you're a little bit uncomfortable, but afterwards you're like, you know what? That wasn't that bad. I can deal with that better next time. And then, you know, you build, you grow, you adapt. And then all of a sudden you're comfortable talking in front of a heap of people. And, you know, this was a massive part of the process for me with the podcast, man. Like, where I'm recording this 6th of May, 24th of May has been 2 years of podcasting. And for me, when I first started, man, I go back and I listen to those first podcast episodes and, you know, I was rubbish, absolutely rubbish. Now I'm recording podcasts without doing any editing. I was doing so much editing back in the day, man. But now my confidence in being in front of a camera and speaking, you know, has improved dramatically just because I put myself in that position. And initially when I first started the podcast, I was like, you know, what if I say something wrong? What if I swear too much? What if people don't like it? What if they're blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whatever, like, just put yourself in that position. You've got to put yourself in a little bit of an uncomfortable position if you want to grow, if you want to learn, if you want to adapt to it. And it's awesome to hear what you're saying, man, and go through that process yourself. Now, you've been talking about connections. And again, this is very important, especially as, you know, a lot of veterans, when they do transition out of the military, they do lose their tribe. And that is a very important part of making good social connections. And when we lose those social connections, you know, again, it makes it easier to then start, you know, becoming a little bit of a recluse and isolating yourself, not talking to people, so on and so forth. So can you talk to me about some of the most memorable connections that you've made and conversations that you've had with people, you know, basically strangers that you're meeting on this journey, and you might meet them for one day and then, you know, you're off the next day. Like, talk to me about some of the most memorable conversations that you've had.
And how that's
affected you.
I really appreciate that question, because it just makes me so happy when I think there's so many different things that have happened so far, so many different connections, so many different people, and some huge things that have happened. If I go back to fairly early on in my run, only a few weeks in, one guy put me up. He's an ex-Navy, and he'd been out of the Navy for 15 years, and, you know, he wasn't in the best shape. He wasn't completely unfit, but he'd moved to a new area. I didn't know anyone, kind of had few issues in his head, as a lot of people do, but he hadn't spoken to anyone about it for 15 years. Anyway, he met me. I had another guy running with me, staying with me for a week, very similar to myself. And when we first met him, he came and joined us. We stayed at his house with his wife and his newborn baby, and he instantly got a connection from us. And we were just so open and talking about stuff and very positive in our ways, talking about different ways that we do to strengthen our mindset every day. And you could just see the spark in his eyes. He was just like, oh my goodness, this is something I've had in my head, but just, you know, it's just been going around my head. I didn't realize other people even thought it. And then we told about some of the problems that we've had. And he's like, yeah, I've had those problems too. And you could just see the elation coming out of him. So the next day he decided to join the run. He was like, you know what, I don't want you guys to disappear from my life just yet. So he told work not coming in that day. I think he pulled a sickie or something. And then he came running with us. But just so happened, on that day, another guy, an ex-paratrooper, came and joined us. And he'd been out for 10 years and exactly the same position. He'd been very recluse in the last few years. He hadn't spoken to anyone about his feelings and emotions. He'd become a very spiritual person, but because of the people around him, you know, they saw that all of it as wishy-washy, and he, again, he couldn't open up. And we were, between the four of us, we were just talking about sort of spiritual sort of feelings, how we all felt it. And the two guys that joined us, the paratrooper and the Navy guy, they were just, you could see them in their faces. They were just so elated that someone else had the feelings, and it wasn't just them, and able to talk to each other or talk to different people about it. And then the best thing that came out of that is those two people who had lived maybe a mile away from each other for 10 years, didn't know about each other, struggling with the same things. They're now best friends, and they go running almost every single day with each other. They're able to talk to each other. They're expanding their network, talking to other people. And it's just really, that's a really nice story. You know, that was so early on in the run, and to know that two people who were struggling with their thoughts and emotions, and now, you know, they're able to talk to people, and they both stay in contact now, and they both say, thank you so much for connecting us, even though I didn't mean to, but it's just, that's just what happens. That was a fantastic story.
That is incredible, man. I'm emotional again, bro. What that brings up for me is, like, you know, how important it is to have the right people around you that are on the same wavelength, because, you know, as you said, man, like, a lot of people experience the same thing, but they think they're alone. But when you have people around you that are on the same wavelength, and, you know, you talked about the spiritual side of things, and, you know, we're kind of in this age where it's like the spiritual side of things is kind of a little bit like wishy-washy. Some people are into it, some people are not into it. But I believe it's going through like a transitional period where it's going to be a lot more widely accepted in the next, you know, decade or two. But, you know, the importance for me of having people on the same wavelength is being able to communicate, because, again, you're not going through those feelings alone. Other people go through those feelings. And when you have people on the same wavelength, if they've been on the same journey, maybe they've been on that journey for a little bit longer than you, and maybe they're able to, like, you share what's going on with you, what you're feeling, how you're feeling. You know, maybe you can't explain why you're feeling that way, but someone else has been on that journey a little bit longer and they've experienced that, and the words that they use and the stories that they tell themselves and, you know, the narrative they create, it helps you understand where you're at and helps you find your place. And that's the importance of having a good network and of people that are on the same wavelength as you, is that it, you know, you get to have this communication. And I think we've spoken about this before, like when you talk about things, like, that's how you help organize your thoughts. When you write things down, when you speak, you get an opportunity to organize your thoughts. Like, you have so many 60,000-70,000 thoughts go through your brain every single day, and, you know, if you don't have a way to organize that, then it just becomes a jumble, it becomes a mess.
Yeah, you've got to, it's talking to people is a way of journaling, isn't it? It's a way of getting everything out there. Even if you think even if you think later on that half of what I said was rubbish, it doesn't matter. Like, journaling, half of that, like, I've listened to you talking before, I think you call it like brain dumping. Just get it all out on the paper, get it out there. But you can do that through talking as well. And when you're running or walking or doing some sort of physical activity, when all your systems are stimulated, there's no better way than no better time to talk to someone.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Mate, that's a really cool story. I want to go the other side now, about, you know, you've felt these amazing highs, but this is life, man. You know, the higher the highs, the higher the peaks, the lower the troughs, right? Like, it's very difficult to live in this happy medium. So I'm sure there's been times where you have gone to a dark place mentally, and, you know, maybe something's hurting first thing in the morning, you've just got a little niggle, and then that's that one thing that's just, you know, I'm sure there's been times where it's been like a lonely trail where you don't see anyone for a long period of time, hours at a time, miles at a time, right? Where, you know, those little niggles just kind of get amplified. Maybe the weather's a little bit shitty, maybe, you know, whatever, you didn't get a good night's sleep, or you're left a little bit late, or whatever those external circumstances are, like, you know, those things, again, they're going to influence your mindset, your attitude, how you're feeling, your thoughts, your emotions. So has there been times where you have kind of gone down the other way and you are experiencing some of those troughs mentally and physically?
Yeah, slightly. I mean, it's as soon as I do, because of the position I'm in, and every single morning I'm with someone, or every throughout the day, normally I'm with someone, not always, but I've normally got people running with me. So it's quite difficult to get those lows because I'm always with someone. And when you're in someone's company, you put that extra armor on and you don't allow yourself to get in that position, especially if it's a stranger you don't know. But one thing that has happened, I don't know if it might affect my reputation a bit, but I'll be honest. When you've done like a big run, or you've done a marathon or something, you kind of finish and then you go, oh, I just want a drink. You know, that because you've achieved something and you're like, I just want to wind down. I just want to have a drink and wind down. So I get, because I'm running 6 out of 7 days a week, and I'm averaging 31 miles a day, and I'm constantly talking about mental health, talking about problems, talking about suicide, some deep conversation. You know, it gets you a bit. Sometimes if I get somewhere, I just want to have a drink. And then sometimes 2, 3, 4 drinks later, I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, it affects me a bit. And the next day I then wake up and I feel crap with myself. And I'm like, why did you do that? Why did you go and have them drinks again? And the next day it happens again, and I've had a few more drinks. So I think I've been drinking more on this run than I was before. And it's pretty crazy when you think about it. But sometimes you've got to let yourself have them moments. But that kind of, like, I get frustrated with myself. But I think the purpose behind this run is so strong for me. And like I said, I've lost 3 more friends since doing this run. So whenever I have these moments and I think, you know, my body's hurting, I'm on my own, I've been running in bloody freezing cold temperatures, it's raining all day, my feet are soaking wet, my bag hurts, what am I actually doing? You do get those moments, but then very quickly, I'm so mentally prepared. And like you said, I'm on this mission now, and it's such a strong mission that mentally I'm changing how I'm thinking almost instantly. So the lows are not being too low. When I get the lows normally is if I'm by myself in an apartment or something and there's no one around me, and I end up having a few drinks and maybe put some crapper food than what I would normally have done around other people. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I can quickly snap out of it and go, do you know what? That's in the past. It's done. Let's move on. Let's move forward and see if we can improve.
Yeah. I love that, man. And to tie in what you're saying there, like, I totally understand running and then feeling like, and, you know, sharing these conversations, going through these different emotions, meeting new people, etc., and then wanting to have a drink at the end of the day, like just feeling like you need to have a drink. You know, there's a couple of things that I want to touch on as well, because there's going to be some physiological, there's going to be some science, I don't want to say science, but there's going to be some factors that contribute to that. Like, you're covering a lot of miles every day, right? Like, you're burning through a lot of energy. So, you know, your body is going to be like craving some energy, some quick energy that's going to be utilized, right? And also, you know, drinking alcohol is a decent way to wind down sometimes. Can it affect sleep? Yes. Can it, you know, leave you a little bit dehydrated? Yes. Can it leave you a little bit inflamed? Yes, but it's like anything, man. You know, if you use it for the right reasons, then it can be beneficial for you. If you have 1 or 2 beers, 3 beers, helps take the edge off, helps you unwind after being, you know, in a heightened state all day, then, you know, that's going to allow you to get to sleep better. It's going to allow you to have potentially drop your inhibitions and have better conversations, deeper conversations, better connections with the people that you're meeting, right? So, you know, don't beat yourself up about that, man. Like, enjoy it for what it is, because, you know, in the worlds that we live in, everything is celebrated around food and alcohol, right? Like, whenever we get together for Christmases, barbecues, birthdays, weddings, even funerals, right? There's always food and drink that we use to celebrate, right? So, you know, if you use that tool correctly, it can provide many benefits. If you use that tool incorrectly, it can you know, cause you to go off track a little bit. So, yeah, totally understand where you're coming from, man, but don't beat yourself up about it, bro. You're using it for a purpose, right? As long as you make a conscious decision, hey, I'm justifying this decision because I'm meeting these new people. They want to have a drink with me. I'm happy to have a couple of drinks with me, but I know my limit. If I have 5 drinks, probably going to go a little bit too far. I'm going to wake up tomorrow, had a shit sleep, perform poorly, you know, be carrying inflammation, make poor decisions with food, so on and so forth. But I know that I can get away with 3 or 4 drinks and it's not having too much of a detrimental impact. If anything, it's actually adding to my conversations and my connections.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that. And that certainly is what I've been telling myself. So, you know, I know that. But you know, it's when I don't have a drink, like my, and I'm doing this fitness, my, as I'm sure you know, my level of fitness and mind state is so strong. It's so powerful. It's like I'm on another level. And then it's like, it's so strong that I think that's probably why I didn't sometimes have a drink, to try and bring myself back down again. Because I'm like, I'm floating up, I'm way up higher. But then when I have a drink, I come down a bit. And I think that's sometimes why I get annoyed. I'm like, well, you were so high up there, but maybe there's a reason for it, you know? And it's not like it hasn't affected. I'm still running 30 plus miles every day. I'm still meeting people, still making connections. But like you say, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I think I was trying to find any sort of low points because this journey has been such a higher time. But I think the low point is really going to come at the end, to be fair. I'm not going to lie. I think this flying higher for so long, for 7 months, and I'm sure at the end it's going to be, you know, it's pretty strong for another few more weeks, especially when it comes to media and everything. And there's going to be a dip. So I'm trying to psychologically prepare myself for that somehow.
Brilliant, man. That was actually going to lead into my next question, you know, because it's the same as you mentioned earlier, coming back from deployment, like you're overseas, you're on fucking high alert all the time. And then all of a sudden, like you're back in your hometown and like nobody around you knows what you've gone through, what you've seen. And, you know, it goes both ways, of course, but, you know, it's kind of like, all right, that's done. And it's like, you've got nothing to work towards. And it happens all the time with athletes, man. You know, people that compete at the highest level, they win a fucking gold medal at the Olympics and then they retire and they're like, what now? That's when the wheels start falling off, right? What are some of the tools that you're using, or what are some of the thoughts that have come into your mind to kind of help you deal with that? I mean, the first thing is being aware. I love the fact that you said that's probably going to be the biggest low point. And when you're aware of something, you can prepare for it. If you're unaware of it, you can't prepare, right? And the point is, like, you fucking know what's going to happen. You've just got to ride it out, man. You've got to use your tools and figure out what's going to work best for you. We just recently had Anzac Day in Australia. So it's where we, you know, it's a day of reminiscing for when the Anzac Australian New Zealand Army Corps landed in Gallipoli in World War One. And, you know, that was, you know, the first conflict that Australia was involved with as a young nation. And, you know, the Anzac spirit is something that's been built upon and Australians are proud of. And every Anzac Day is a tradition with my military mates where we get together in a city, a different city every year. And, you know, we put aside our own lives and we spend a couple of days together and reminisce, have a couple of beers, you know, throw some banter, just catch up on all the good times, the bad times, and, you know, get the families involved. And we want to see them. We want to see the families, the wives, the girlfriends, the kids, etc. You know, we want them to see how important it is to see our mates so that we can continue this tradition. And, you know, there's been times in the past, man, where, you know, I'll go back to Australia. I haven't been back to Australia for 3 years for it, but I'll go back to Australia and have the fucking time of my life. But then I get back to Thailand and I just feel a little bit empty and I feel a little bit lost and I feel a little bit depressed because I've just caught up with some of the most important people and some of my most loved family members and friends, you know, that I haven't seen for years. I've just caught up with so many of them in such a short period of time. It's just this like overwhelming emotion And then, you know, I get back to Thailand, and don't get me wrong, I fucking love my life here, but, you know, I don't have the same connections that I do, you know, when I go back for Anzac Day. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was talking to one of my mates, maybe you know him, Tristan from Blind Tiger Yoga. He's not running Blind Tiger anymore. He's been a guest on the podcast. Really, really good dude. One of my best mates, man. And I remember a couple of years ago, I was like, hey, man, we're going to Brisbane for Anzac Day. You're going to come up this year? And he goes, you know what? He goes, I don't want to come, man, like, because I have such a good time that when I get home, I'm depressed for at least a month or two afterwards, you know, and I don't want to put myself in that position. And I was like, man, you're fucking 100% right. But in saying that, like, I'm like, I felt the same as well. However, I'm willing to put myself in that position. I'm willing to make that sacrifice just so I get to experience that high. I'm willing to experience that low so I get to experience that high.
Yeah, what a conflict of emotions, though, isn't it? And, you know, I think going back to us being on tours as soldiers or whatever service you're in, you're away for, I don't know, maybe 6-7 months, maybe on average, maybe a bit longer, and you don't drink, your mind is so clear, you're in a great position, and then all you're thinking is, oh, when I get back, I'm going to invest in this property, I'm going to buy this car, I'm going to do this course, I'm going to do a master's and a PhD and all sorts of stuff. And then you go back and you're back into reality with people that, you know, you knew before you left, and you just, you're having a few drinks and reality hits you again and you're back to the person you were before you went on tour. And you get that kind of like, oh, what happened to this superhero I created in my head? So it definitely happens. And I think you're right. I think you need to put yourself in that position. If something makes you happy, then go and do it. And like you said, awareness is the most important key. So when you're starting to feel that, okay, when I'm going to go to Anzac Day, I'm going to have the time of my life, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to feel crap. Okay, so what methods? Let's write down what I can do on day one when I come back. What am I going to do? Let's just put my feet up. Let's absorb everything. Let's reflect on the good times. Let's maybe have a phone call with a couple of the guys so we haven't cut it off instantly. Let's reminisce about what happened over the weekend. And then, okay, then day two, I've recovered a bit. Let's go to the gym. Let's do whatever. And, you know, just get a process going so that you're not just sitting indoors thinking, oh, you know, bring it. Because I'm sure when I meet all my army mates, I adore them so much. And I have this elation when I meet them. I can't stop smiling. I become this little kids around them, and then I go away. And, you know, but what's happened is, as good as a feeling as it is, these are still guys that I went through some of the most darkest times with. So you've got those emotions subconsciously, probably, maybe consciously, going on in your head. I met George, what an amazing guy. We done 3 tours together. However, I was also it was also me and him that picked up our mate's body or whatever it may be. And even though you're not talking about it on a day, or you might be talking about it on a day, it's then going to start flooding back to you when all the endorphins start to calm down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, that's that connection that you've made with that person. Whenever you're with that person, you've got these associated emotions that come up as well. Yeah, man, so it's a difficult one, but, you know, it is, as you mentioned, like, just being aware of something, knowing that you are going to go through that process, that, you know, that not necessarily a trough, but, you know, some down times, and, you know, starting to put some tools into place and thinking about some methods that you can use to help you deal with that. Now, when do you finish your run?
What date is it today? Is it like the 4th of May, the 5th of May, 6th of May, something like that? So I don't finish... 6th of May. So I don't finish till the 4th of October. It's a long old way away. You know, I'm doing a new route that no one's ever done it before. I'm running England, Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland, the Isle of Wight and the Isle of Man. No one's ever put all of these in together. Some people have done bits of them. So this is, but I'm actually doing it in a shorter time than anyone's done, even the lesser countries. So I would want to get this over and done with. That's why I have to run 30 plus miles a day. So 4th of October, it seems like a long way away, and you know, it is a long way away, but I'm already over 2 months through, which it doesn't feel like, which is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your plans when you do finish the run? Like, are you going to take a little bit of time off? Are you going to have some downtime? Are you going to launch straight into like media commitments? And talk to me about that process. Like, what are some of the things you've already thought about that you're looking to put into place?
The PR's got to be number one. You know, we're going to be hitting PR hard. We've got opportunities to really promote this run and the charity. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm in the same bracket, but you look at Ross Edgley when he swam around the UK islands. He had very minimal media connections, and it wasn't until he finished it all spiraled out of control. And you know, you see where he is now. So if I can kind of like hit into that sort of PR and you know start, I've already got quite a few big TV shows interested once I finish. So I can foresee that happening. Hopefully, fingers crossed, and that's going to bring in a lot more money, a lot more connections and backing for the charity. But the big thing for me is the charity. It's because we formed the charity, so we are a full non-for-profit charity, but we're non-active, which you're not supposed to be. You know, if you mean you've got a charity, you're supposed to be helping people with it, but we need a fundraiser to develop this retreat. So we're in a bit of a catch-2 here. So, you know, the charity regulations board are going to be all over us going, why are you still not done anything? Why have you not done anything? So as soon as I finish, I need to be looking at sites, looking at development, construction. I'm already talking to all these sorts of people. So it's going to be a very, very busy time, but fun and enjoyable. And that's the whole point of this run.
Yeah, it's funny what you just said. Why have you not done anything? Mate, I've just run 5,000 fucking miles.
Yeah, true. But they're looking at that. They want to see how many numbers of people you've helped. And I'm like, well, I can't give you numbers of, you know, I have helped people. I've helped people on the run, but they won't see that as the charity itself. But it's fine. It's fine because we'll slog it through.
Because they don't see numbers, man. They don't see numbers going somewhere. They don't see money being donated. Like, that's a brilliant point, man. Like, and that was a question that I was going to ask you as well, because obviously a lot of people have helped you going through this run and, you know, have played a part in your therapy in quotation marks, right? But I guarantee that you've helped a lot of fucking people as well. I mean, you mentioned that story about those two guys that you connected that are now fucking best buddies that are bouncing off each other, man. Like, that's incredible, mate. Like, have you you know, had people reach out to you and say, you know, like, you really sparked something in me that helped me change, or you know, has anyone shared any stories with you? And just talk to me about like how, or some of the feedback that's come back from people that you may have helped on this journey.
It's lots of people have come back to me. When I say lots, I couldn't have put a number on it, but it's probably in the hundreds of people so far have said to me, for listening to your story, running with you, talking with you, seeing what you're doing for people. It's thank you so much. You've inspired me. You've helped me. You've changed me. But me and Simon, one of the other co-founder, we're constantly in talk to people. So I'll give you one example. Is up in Scotland, I stayed with an ex, an officer from an infantry battalion who had a really bad time in Afghanistan. He was in charge of a group of guys, lost a lot, blames himself a lot, and he has done for a long time. He's been all over the place for quite a while, even with his family. And he really wanted to connect with me. He came running with me, came cycling, he put me up at his. We had some really deep conversations. And he's been a big advocate. He's been screaming and shouting, telling everyone, you know, Head Up Charity is such a great thing. Paul has helped change my life. Simon's been on the phone with him. He's putting him in touch with certain other people. I've got a talk. He works for a very big energy company, and he told them what I was doing and how I've helped him. He's been on medication for the last 10 years. He really wants to come off it, and he hasn't been able to. So we're actually putting him through a process now, where he can get himself in such a good mindset that he should hopefully be in a good place to come off his medication. So we're working with him on that. And he's so grateful that he spoke to his company. They've now sponsored the run. And then look, I've got a call with them after this where I'm talking to hundreds of their veterans community. And they're looking to make some large donations for the charity, but also be connected with Head Up in the future, where they can send their veterans and also help financially keep us running. So that's been fantastic. And there's been lots and lots of occasions, and that's what keeps me on the high. And so many people just saying, messaging me saying, "Paul, that run was fantastic. Your conversation, your energy, your enthusiasm, your willingness to put yourself out there to help people it's feeding my ego, but I'm trying not to let it, because it's a nice thing, and I've got to do that. But I don't like to be that person in the spotlight. You know, I don't want everyone going, "Oh, look at this guy! Look how amazing!" It makes me feel really cringy and awkward. So, but there is lots of people coming forward and saying thank you, and you really helped me. And I've had lots of people, civilian people, who they've got no connection to the military, but they may have lost someone to suicide, or they may have family members that are really struggling, and they're saying, "Look, although we're not military, we appreciate that that you and other people out there are putting themselves out there to help people in the wider world. Everyone needs someone at some time." So yeah, it's been really nice.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. Mate, I was laughing when you're saying you don't like being in the spotlight, because I'm the same, man. Like, I, you know, went from being a sniper, where you go out, you want to be fucking good at your job, but you also want to be a ghost. You don't want anyone to know who you are. You don't want any recognition. You just want to go out and just fucking, you know, protect the boys, do what you need to do, and then sink back into the shadows. Right. But over the last probably 2 years, what's that?
No, I say, you still feel proud of it, though, don't you? You feel proud, but then when people publicly say "well done," it's a bit like, "Oof, you know, stop me using my name too much."
Yeah, man. Dude, it's going to be an interesting. I mean, this is probably a good conversation for us to have as well, because, you know, over the last couple of years, my kind of profile on social media has built quite rapidly, I'd say probably over the last 9 months or so, last year. And, you know, obviously with the journey that I've been on, with going to Russia with Peter Yarn and da da da, like, you know, when Peter Yarn won his bantamweight, the interim bantamweight title, and we're leaving the octagon in Abu Dhabi, man, like, all the crowd's going crazy, they're reaching over, like, high fiving and shit. And dude, like, I just heard one person yell out, Cobes, and like, I went over and high five him, didn't know who the fuck it was. You know, people were recognizing me in the airport, stopping me for photographs and things like that. You know, I got back to, I was in India, man, filming India's Ultimate Warrior with Discovery Channel. And I got a message once I got back to Thailand saying, "Oh my God, I can't believe it was you in India, blah, blah, blah. You're my favorite," fucking called me influencer. I'm like, please don't call me that again. And then, like, I got back to Thailand, and I was sitting in a restaurant, man, and I saw this dude, like, kept looking at me from across the cafe where I was doing some work. And I was like, oh man, I wonder if this dude's like gonna come and start on me or something. You know, as a former soldier, man, like, you fucking keep an eye on things, and you're like, all right, this dude's eyeing me up, man, like, there must be a reason for it. So you kind of like on a little bit of high alert, and then the dude gets up and like starts walking over to me. He's looking at me. I'm like, here we go. And he comes over and he's like, "Oh, you're Sean Coba." And I was like, "Oh yeah, man." And he's like, "Oh," and introduced himself. And like, you know, so I totally understand what you're going through, man, and how you're feeling. It's bizarre for me. You know, like I said, as a sniper, you go out, you do your job, you're proud of what you do, but then you sink back into the shadows. No one knows who you are. And now, you know, people are recognizing me and things like that. Mate, something it's going to start happening to you as well, man. Like, as your profile builds, you know, as you go through this process, as you go through this journey, particularly as you get through, you know, towards the end of it, and the media hype starts building and you start pushing out, and you've got your PR stuff going on, the social media and stuff going on, man, people are going to start recognizing you. And it's going to be, it's probably going to be a little bit of a shock to the system, if I'm honest. Is that something you've thought about?
Yeah, I mean, it is. But again, you start to get a bit egotistic, don't you? Like, oh, all right, what if it doesn't happen? Stop getting ahead of yourself. But I'm pretty sure it will. And, like, you know, quite often I go running. And when I'm in the zone, especially when I'm on my own, all these people looking at me, I'm like, why are people looking at me? And then I've got to realize that, oh, yeah, it's because I'm like the most, I don't know if you see my tan, but I've got this crazy tan going on. So I'm this bright orange guy running around with a 4 foot flag. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why they're looking at me.
Yeah, you're like, you're drawing attention to yourself, you dickhead.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for. But I listen to all your podcasts. I love listening to what you talk about, especially when you go into your holistic stuff that you've done before. I'm always listening to that. So as I go around, I get a lot of people join me on the running, especially from the armed forces, RAF, Navy, Army. And I'm always, they're always asking me, what do you listen to? Can you recommend anyone? I'm like, yeah, there's a guy called Sean Cobes. I tell him a bit about you. And in fact, just yesterday I was running with
four RAF guys. And I said, there's a guy called Cobes. He went, oh, Sean Cobar, the Australian guy. I was like, yeah. So, you're hitting all the, even the northeast of far northeast of England, people know who you are, mate. So, yeah, you.
That's so crazy, man. That blows my mind, bro. But it's very cool. It's very cool, man. And, you know, this ties into what we were talking about earlier, mate. Like, you know, kind of I feel bad for, like, segueing back towards, like, some negative stuff with suicide and things like that. But you've had three mates, like, commit suicide in the last couple of months since you stepped off. And to me, like, that means that we're just not reaching enough people. Like, we're just not getting that message to maybe not enough people, but maybe to the right people. And, you know, hearing that where, you know, people are starting to, you know, hear my name and people know who I am in, you know, certain parts of the world, which I never would have fucking thought that I'd reach. Like, just knowing that, like, gives me confidence that, you know, we've just got to continue spreading this message, putting these, you know, having these types of conversations, man, that people are going to resonate with, not only resonate with themselves, but then also pass on to their friends and family and people that may, you know, have some mental health implications or maybe not even have any issues, but just maybe maybe someone in their life does, and they want to try and help them kind of manage their mind and get themselves back on track, man. And to me, this is why I do this, bro. You know, like I said, it's been almost 2 years since I started the podcast, and, you know, it's been an amazing process for me in my own journey of growth and development, but also, like, knowing that, you know, I'm helping people, and I don't do it for the thanks. I don't do it for, you know, the messages that come through. But when those messages do come through, man, I'm like, it melts my heart, bro. I'm like, oh man, that makes me so emotional knowing that, you know, I may have potentially helped someone, you know, get themselves back on track, or helped them help someone that they care for, that they love and they care about, you know, manage their mind and get them back on the right track as well. So, you know, have you thought about that for yourself? Like, how you're impacting other people that you may not even have met? Obviously you're meeting all these people, but then those people that you're meeting, man, like, they're going and telling other people. And Simon said it, man. He's like, your energy is just so contagious. And that's what it is. Like, dude, that's what it is, man. Like, this is why environment's so important, right? Like, you have the right people around you, spreading the right energy, spreading the right message. Like, you have no choice but to fall in line with that. Otherwise, you just fall outside of that circle.
Yeah, and I think it's the indirect impact you have without knowing. If you can keep that knowledge in mind, because sometimes you might think, oh, I don't know who I'm helping. I've spoken to one or two people, but that's about it. And a couple of people have messaged me this week saying they're helping, but who else? But there's such an indirect impact. I mean, I listen to your previous podcasts and current ones. And I take so much from that. So I've actually taken a lot of lessons from listening to you. And now I'm running around the UK telling all these people about the stuff that I've learned from you. So that's a huge indirect impact. And they're now passing it forward. So it's massive. And I get lots of people who come up to me and say, oh, Paul, I heard about you through whatever, or I've been following you for a while, or there was a lady yesterday who said, she came out and she said to say thank you, and that her son's taken a lot away from what I've done, and it's really helped him. But I didn't know that, and unless that lady came and told me, I would never know. So I think you just got to be safe in the knowledge that if you feel like you're on the right path, if you feel like you're being productive and you're helping people, then you probably are. You just don't know how far that impact is having. So you can just do whatever feels right to you, and just be safe in the knowledge that there'll be others that would appreciate that.
Yeah. First of all, mate, I appreciate you saying those very, very kind words, man. And it's the same for me. Like anytime I had a conversation with the Swiss 8 boys yesterday, Adrian and Mex. That episode's going to be live coming Monday. And then this episode's going to drop the week after. And, you know, I always love people speaking to people on the same wavelength, like that conversation with Simon as well. Like that, dude, that conversation just flowed, man. And we just went back and forth, bounced ideas. And for me, like I learned just as much from you guys, man. And, you know, I've done a lot of study in terms of like psychology and NLP and behavioral change and cognitive behavioral therapy and da 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 da. And like, you know, it's all well and good knowing this information from a textbook, but then when you start having conversations with people, like I've said, man, I help speaking, writing helps me organize my thoughts, and it's the same for most people. So there's times where I speak to you and you say blah blah blah, blah, and I'm like, boom, that like it rings a bell in my head, and I'm like, I've heard this before. Where have I heard this before? And it helps me kind of put together some of the textbook knowledge, and then, you know, gives some like real life application, and I can see the crossover there, and I'm like, all right, cool. Like that helps me understand what you're going through, and then I think of something in my life that helps, you know, or kind of relates to that. And once you can find something that you relate to, it's easier. Or it's easier to then be able to explain that to other people to be able to help them. So yeah, I really appreciate that, man. And like I said, I learned just as much from my guests as they learn from me. And hopefully these conversations are helping people and you know, getting out there and spreading the right message and you know, helping people manage their minds and put some little take some tools and techniques and takeaways and actionable steps from these episodes. Did you listen to, you obviously listened to the episode with Si and I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, I really like listening to you. I said it before. I'm not going to say it anymore because you're probably starting to get that cringy.
Yeah, please stop, mate.
But I love listening to Si. Like, he's just such a funny, he's got one of those, I don't know, it's something about his voice. You hear it and you just feel, I don't know, a bit secure and warm, and you hear him. So, and he's got a great way of talking. But then listening to the two of you, I remember being on a run when I listened to your talk, and I was up in Scotland on this cliff edges. So it was quite a difficult run, and it was pouring down with rain. And I was like, oh, this is going to be one of these days, isn't it? And I was like, oh, I know what I can do. I said, just Coach and Si just done a podcast. I'll put the podcast on, and I was just smiling and laughing out loud all the way through my run. It was just a fantastic conversation. Very good.
Oh man, that's really cool, dude. You've made me emotional numerous times in this conversation. I got tears in my eyes again, mate. This has been an incredible conversation. I know it's your rest day, so I'm going to let you go so you can go and stretch up and look after the body, and you know, look after the mind. Talk to some people, make those connections, man. But mate, I'm absolutely inspired with what you're doing. I love seeing the stories every morning of you getting up and, you know, spreading your message, and then off you go. And, I'll really be looking forward to, you know, seeing that story unfold, not just through, the next few months, but also, you know, the next couple of years. And it's definitely something that I want to be involved with, you know, being an ambassador for Swiss 8, pretty much doing something similar in Australia in a different model. You know, I'm looking forward to working together with Head Up and building like a really good brand, a really good model that is going to help people, you know, get themselves in a good mindset, continue improving, continue growing, developing, and just help people be better at life, man. I love it. I'm looking forward to the collaboration moving forward.
It's going to be such a great journey. We're already in it, and it's come from nothing. I mean, we had no idea what was going to happen, how we were going to achieve it, but it was just about putting yourself in that position, being consistent, being persistent, and just seeing what unfolds. And We wanted to raise £3 million, or we do want to raise £3 million for these retreats, and there's different avenues you can get that money from. But we've only started fundraising since September, and we're already over £350,000. That's how much people want this retreat to happen. You know, it's going to happen now. We've already got the money in the bank, and enough money to get the first bit of development going. And we're not even a year in yet. So retreat's going to happen, and we love the fact of what Swiss 8 do. I'm so happy that we're connected and that we're going to help each other. And I just think it's the development of everything is just going to get going to blow up. You know, it's going to go way beyond what we can even imagine or comprehend right now. So exciting times to come.
Yeah, I agree, mate. You're a very inspiring guy, Paul. I love having a chat with you, mate. Love your energy. I love your positivity, man. I love everything that you're doing right now. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to being a part of the journey moving forward. So much appreciated, man. I'll have all of your links in the show notes. If there's anything else that you want to send me through to have in the show notes, if people want to donate, they want to get in contact, send that through to me so I can put them in. But yeah, love your work, brother.
Thanks a lot, Kobe. Thanks for having me on, mate.
Appreciate your time, mate. All the best. We'll catch up again soon.
Yes.
This episode was brought to you by Swiss 8, which is a proactive mental health charity that was designed initially for veterans, by veterans, that has been pushed out to the wider community. It is created with veteran lived experience, meaning that a lot of the content creators and contributors are veterans that have utilized these tools that they're pushing out, putting onto the platform. With great success in their own lives. So it's tried, it's true, it's tested. The whole goal of Swiss 8 is to allow you to structure and schedule the most important things in your life. Build your tribe, structure your routine, create your identity, and find your purpose. This episode was also brought to you by My State. State is formerly known as B Spunky. It is a Australian TGA listed nutraceutical, meaning that it is made from all organic compounds. All of the stuff that you need, none of the stuff that you don't. I've been an ambassador for Be Spunky / My State for a couple of years now. It is one of those products that I take religiously on a day-to-day basis to help me optimize my stress response and my hormone regulation. If you're interested in getting on board, hit them up. Follow the links in the show notes. Make sure you type in Kobes, K-O-B-E-S 10 at checkout for your 10% discount. If you found some benefit from this episode, please make sure you share with your friends and family, anyone you think the message will resonate with. If you share it to your stories, please make sure you tag me so that I can then reshare that as well. Any 5-star ratings and reviews are much appreciated, guys. It always helps me bump up the ratings. It allows more eyes to get onto the podcast, more ears to start listening to the message, which then also creates more awareness and allows me to attract bigger names, bigger guests. For your listening pleasure. Much love, guys. Peace.